WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. At the end of this podcast, stick around for a rundown of the latest news here in the Chicago area. But first, let's talk about the American dream for a moment. Buying a home has long been part of that, but for many Chicagoans, that dream is feeling further away. Whether you're looking to buy your first home, move into a bigger place, or just stay in the neighborhood that you love, finding affordable housing in Chicago is getting tougher. Home prices are climbing, inventory is tight, and a major proposal aimed at making it easier to build new housing across the state, well, that stalled in Springfield overnight. So where does that leave the city's housing market? And what can city leaders do to help more Chicagoans become homeowners? In this episode of the pod, we'll tap in with one of those leaders and discuss the challenges and potential solutions. At the table was Lisette Castaneda, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Housing. Now, we have a state budget. It passed just this morning, but Governor Pritzker's build plan did not get a vote. Now, a reminder for listeners, the plan would, in short, override zoning rules in cities and towns statewide in an effort to make building more homes easier, more efficient, and cheaper. So I started by asking the commissioner about her reaction to the build plan not getting a vote.
Ultimately, we're glad that the conversations that we've been having at the city level are also happening at the state level. For now, we're going to concentrate on the things that we can do within the city of Chicago to ensure that working class families can both rent affordably and find affordable options for home ownership. Certainly through the Department of Housing, we have a variety of programs. We have the City Lots for Working Families, where folks are able to build affordable home ownership opportunities for people. The Department of Planning and Development has the Missing Middle Program. There's lots of things that we are doing within the city of Chicago to ensure this.
Mm-hmm. And zoning authority, which would have fallen, you know, under this build plan, it was part of the reason why a lot of folks were sort of up in arms about it. It's not something that's given up easily, right? In Chicago, you have alders who have a big say in what gets developed in their wards. This falls under what we know as aldermanic prerogative. Could something like the build plan help Chicago to create more affordable options, though?
I think that we've done a really great job of working with our aldermanic partners to ensure that we are building what fits in the community and what makes sense. You've seen many alders who have done upzoning and who really are concentrating on how to ensure that we're also building affordably through the affordable requirements ordinance and any other kind of zoning changes that they make. And we're really proud of that work.
So a question on everyone's minds, I think, is how do we create more housing inventory? I know that you've been hard at work on this. You've already started to talk about some of that work. But walk us through the steps that the city has been taking in recent months to create more housing stock, because that's the root of the issue here.
Yeah, absolutely. So just on April 1st, we announced the latest awardees of our qualified allocation plan. Those are 15 projects that are going to bring over 1,100 units of affordable housing across the city of Chicago. We are building on the north side, on the south side, and on the west side. We also have a pipeline that includes over 4,000 units right now. During this administration, we have advanced more than 10,000 units of affordable housing. We have built, we have constructed, we have projects under review. We have projects under construction. Just on Wednesday, we cut the ribbon on 43 units of affordable housing at the intersection of South Chicago and the South Shore community areas, mm-hmm. Thrive Exchange. And that was a really wonderful investment of over $19.5 million from the city.
Yeah. Part of that, too, that announcement on April 1st was about ADUs, right? Accessory mm-hmm. dwelling units, or granny flats, as yes. a lot of people know them. There was so much back and forth about the mm-hmm. Folks wanting to not have those in their backyard, literally. Mm-hmm. And so now we've sort of landed at this place where it's been advanced, where we can have these ADUs. And so I wonder if you could sort of talk about the progression of that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. April 1st was a big day for us. Yeah. So that was the day we opened the applications for the additional dwelling units. In that first week, we received over 124 applications.
I bet.
Folks are really excited. It's about multi-generational living. It's about having the ability to have maybe a little extra income or just be able to downsize but not have to move. There's a lot of different reasons why folks want ADUs. And right now, over 30 wards have opted in, at least partially. And we're really, again, proud of the work that we've done in conjunction with our aldermanic partners.
We all know that that there's a housing affordability crisis, right? On the housing shortage, though, talk about how short we are. What does that mean specifically? How many additional units of housing do we need in the city?
Yeah, just affordable units alone, it's over 200,000 units per the latest estimates. Okay. And so we know that units in general, it is more than that. And so we know that there is a need to build more, which is also why we have done things under this administration, like the establishment of green social housing, which we expect will also bring hundreds of units online every year.
Mm-hmm. I was driving around this past weekend, Lissette, and it was disheartening. I was on the south side and I was seeing just a lot of boarded up buildings. And I really was just kind of taking stock and thinking, I hope this is on the city's radar. I hope all of these places, which could be potential future homes for folks, are being, taken care of, are being marked down, or, are there plans in store? And knowing that there's so much need for housing, it's really difficult to see that and to see the many vacant lots. I know that more than 600 of them went on sale on April 1st. Mm-hmm. For private purchase, the goal there being, to add more to, as you mentioned, that missing middle. Mm-hmm. How's that going so far?
Yeah, under the leadership of Commissioner Sierra Boatwright at the Department of Planning and Development, they've done an excellent job of really looking at all of the lots and ensuring that the majority of the lots are for sale for development. And that, I think, has been incredibly successful. In addition to that, you have programs like through Department of Housing, Chicago Neighborhood Rebuild Program, where we partner with CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions, to ensure that general contractors can work with them to rehab vacant and abandoned properties and bring them back to productive use mm-hmm. for the community. We just had a ribbon cutting a couple of weeks ago in Roseland, and it was really great to see that this house didn't just get torn down, but it was instead rehabbed, fits right in with the character of the neighborhood, and is a community that is often overlooked, but in which we are doing a lot to invest in.
I want to talk about housing prices a little bit, because the cost of homes is growing across the country. But if you zero in on Chicago specifically, home prices here are rising a lot faster than the national average. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of factors, including that we know that there is a shortage of supply. And I think the question for us becomes, how do we address those things? And certainly, again, through using the vacant lots to build more affordable housing, through ensuring that anything that is brought online can be kept affordable for the long term. We do this through the Chicago Housing Trust for projects that are eligible. And we also talk about just how do we help folks afford what is out there on the market. And for that, we will also have a really great and exciting announcement later today.
Oh?
Yes.
Anything you want to share now?
We are really intent on ensuring that folks are able to afford what is out there. The mayor and I are really excited for this.
Okay. We'll keep an eye.
Yeah.
Wink, wink. Housing prices, they're driven by market forces, not exactly something that you can control, mm-hmm. of course, with prices escalating so quickly in recent years. Do you think home ownership is becoming something only available to top earners? A lot of people feel that way. What do you say?
I think part of it is thinking about home ownership more broadly than just the single family home, the white picket fence, mom, dad, and the dog, right? I think we need to talk about community land trust. We need to talk about co-ops. We need to talk about other ways that folks are also building community as they go through the home ownership process. And I think that's been really appealing for a lot of people. We're really proud to support that kind of work through the department as well. We have the Shared Equity Impact Program, mm-hmm. and we ensure that folks are able to think about home ownership in a way that might make more sense for them outside of just the very traditional ways. We want everyone to be able to make the best choice for themselves and their families. And we know that that can look in a broad range of ways.
Mm-hmm. Everything is getting more expensive. I don't have to tell you that, right? Food, insurance, groceries, and housing.
Yes.
So it makes it hard for folks to actually try to save up a down payment for a house. That's the big thing, right? And I wonder if you could share a bit more on the avenues of support or resources that are available right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I want to buy a house right now, mm-hmm. and I just don't have mm-hmm. all of the pieces together. Mm-hmm. What can the city help me with?
Yeah, among the things that we do, we have some down payment assistance programs that are specifically targeted already for the homes that are built on city vacant lots. So again, not only are we saying you should build on this lot, we're also helping families to afford them. In addition to that, we are also, again, ensuring that there are some things that are kept long-term, like through the Chicago Housing Trust, which you can find through the city's website. And there you can also see an inventory of homes that are available that are affordable. In addition, for some folks, it's also like, I don't know how to do this, right? Affordability has been such a concern that there is an assumption that there is no way to do this. And through that, we also fund what are called housing counseling agencies across the city of Chicago. Okay. We have them on the southwest and north side. And these are organizations that you can go to get a plan together. You can work with a HUD-certified housing counselor and say, I want to buy a home. This is really important to me. How do I take all the steps to do this? How do we look at my credit? How do we look at my savings plan? How do we make sure that my budget is in line with my goals? And all of those things can happen through those housing counseling centers. So again, on our website, you can find a full list of them.
That sounds promising. And while I have you here, I would love for you to talk to the listener who is maybe in their 20s or 30s or 40s, and they're thinking, I will never be able to own a home. Right? It's something we hear a lot. Mm-hmm. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that being able to make the best choice for yourself and your family is a really important thing. And then figuring out, okay, what are the steps that I can take to get there? None of us sort of spring up knowing all of the things. So finding the resources and the support is really important. But if this is something that you want to do, the resources are out there and we are listening, right? Certainly this administration is one that is very concentrated on this question of affordability and working with the working class residents of Chicago. And so we want to make sure that anything that you're looking for can be found out there, and we're supporting it through the delegate agencies, through the direct work that we are doing. It is possible. Certainly, home ownership is the number one way right now through which we build wealth in this country. And as long as that remains the case, we want to ensure that everyone has access to that.
Now, Commissioner, Mayor Johnson was in Italy last week, right? He was meeting with Pope Leo XIV, as we know, but he was also, which I found really interesting, he was touring affordable housing with the mayor of Rome. Have you had a chance to talk with Johnson yet about how that went or what they discussed?
Yeah, we have not had a chance to debrief yet, but as we were doing the lead up for Green Social Housing, we did a lot of work in talking with our international partners and going out to places like Vienna and Berlin. Members of the administration were also able to do that to look at other ways in which people are building affordability across the globe, not just across the country.
Yeah, tell me more. When you do get a chance to sit down with him post the Rome trip, what else will you be asking him?
Yeah, I'm so curious about how this is being funded and sort of the different fundamental ways in which governments are looking at affordability. And so I definitely want to hear more about what other approaches folks are taking and how they manage to continue to prioritize these things.
Yeah, because it seems like we're not the only ones in this issue, right? This is every big city or every city in America is sort of struggling in some way, shape or form mm-hmm. with housing affordability. I wonder if there are places around the world beyond Rome mm-hmm. that could offer solutions. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we talked to folks in Vienna and Berlin when we were looking at the green social housing model, that the social housing model in general is one that has existed in other places in Europe for very many years. The idea is really about having mixed income housing that is robust and that offers something for everyone at every level. And mm-hmm. that's the model that we took and have now implemented here in Chicago. We are the first major city to do so.
The mayor has argued more progressive revenue at the city and state levels will be needed to create an affordable Chicago. Mm-hmm. On housing affordability and the housing shortage, can we solve these problems, you think, without big changes to our taxing structure?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every single dime that is available to us to use for affordable housing, we have put towards that. Mm-hmm. Our announcement on April 1st has been, was a $300 million investment into affordable housing. We have the Mayor Johnson's Housing and Economic Development Bond that also is money for affordable housing. The more money that there is available to us for affordable housing, the more work that we can do. There are plenty of projects out there. There's plenty of work to be done, and more affordability is needed for our working class Chicagoans. Mm-hmm.
We've been talking a lot about home ownership, but Mayor Johnson has also announced he'll introduce a measure to protect the city's renters from eviction and predatory practices. Mm-hmm. What does the Protecting Renters Ordinance aim to achieve?
Yeah, ultimately, it's exactly what's in the name. We want to protect renters. There are five main pieces to the legislation, which range from a rental registry all the way through establishing permanently a right to counsel program, which allows for low-income Chicagoans to be able to access legal services mm-hmm. in the case that they are facing eviction. Each piece of this legislation was crafted with grassroots housing organizations, with housing justice organizations, as well as talking to industry groups about the things that are out there that are both helpful and frustrating to them.
Like hidden fees.
Yes.
That's one.
Absolutely. It's a huge thing. This will be the first major update to the Residential Landlord-Tenant Ordinance in 40 years. And part of what has happened in those 40 years is that the way in which we rent, the way in which we do housing has changed a lot,
yeah.
including the introduction of fees that are often hidden, that are not understandable. Part of what the RLTO will do, updates will do, is to ban those fees and ensure that everyone knows exactly what they're paying every single month, and that's something that you can plan for. The idea of both the transparency that this ordinance can bring, along with the ability to plan for those things mm-hmm. that you now understand, is going to be a game changer.
And this is a huge piece, because I want to be clear, more than half of Chicagoans are renters.
Yeah, absolutely. Our estimate is that it's about 54% of renters.
Yeah.
Part of what is in the legislation, of course, is a rental registry, which will help us get more accurate numbers and also be able to continue to evolve in our policy solutions.
Cost of living goes up, rent goes up. And, you know, some cities have forms of rent stabilization or rent freezes mm-hmm. in place. Is that an option for Chicagoans?
Yeah, rent control is within the purview of the state legislature. So what PRO does is that we are able to look at what we can do here in the city of Chicago under our own authority to really ensure that we're putting protections in place for tenants.
Well, today is Monday, June 1st. It's moving day for some people. Leave us with this, Commissioner. What's your message to renters in this economy?
Yeah, absolutely. Our big message is we have not forgotten about you. We see the struggles. We hear the stories. We know that sometimes you have a great experience with the landlord and sometimes you don't. And we want to ensure with this legislation that people can avail themselves without it costing extra. You know, right now, the only way for people to exercise their rights is to go through court. Part of what PRO will enforce is be able to say there is a bureau within the Department of Housing that you can go to, that you can get help, that you can get some guidance. This will be true for both tenants and for landlords. So ultimately, we are trying to advance and making the rental situation better for everyone in Chicago.
We've been talking with Lisette Castaneda, who's commissioner of the Chicago Department of Housing. Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Thank you so much for having me.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Now we'll turn to the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. We checked in with Violet Miller, Chicago Sun-Times reporter, Michael Puente, WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor, and Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor. Now that spring legislative session in Springfield is over, and we have a budget. Lawmakers worked all night and wrapped up around 4:30 this morning. But some of Governor Pritzker's biggest priorities never got a vote. So Claire broke it all down.
The $56 billion state budget includes some new taxes on prediction markets, also cryptocurrency, cell phone use in schools for the kiddos. but no votes on build bills, right, to address the housing shortage across the state, or a bill that would regulate data centers largely for AI across the state. And the very big ticket item, a size of a football stadium, you could say, it's the stadium financing bill for the Bears Stadium in suburban Arlington Heights. That one got no votes in the House.
Shocker.
I know. And the saga continues. They might just be doing it to make a documentary out
or
of this.
Or to have us
point.
Continue to talk about it.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it goes on.
Well, you know, Michael, a little bit of a surprise there. No deal on the legislation meant to keep the Bears in Illinois. What should we know about this? Where are we at?
Well, I'm actually not surprised. It just kind of felt the legislators were taking way too long, way to the last minute to get the deal done. It kind of felt like a Matt Eberflus Bears team at the end of the game.
Ooh.
We're just flubbing all the way with clock management. But why would it take so long? I mean, I know they wanted to make a taxing body. I think they were looking to do how Indiana is doing it, making taxing bodies and having sort of like a stadium authority. Why did that idea not get down there sooner, way to the end? Who knows? And but now it just seems like it seems improbable now that they would do a special session in the summer or wait to the fall veto session. It just seems like it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, Arlington Heights would own the stadium outright, but the Bears would have to pay to build it, but then they wouldn't pay any property taxes on it. So there's, I think, just a lot of complication around how that logistically would work.
Yeah.
How taxpayers in Arlington Heights would feel, as we know, has been a point of contention.
Right.
And as Mike pointed out, I mean, they've just been sort of lagging on this and not really showing a lot of urgency.
And for folks trying to follow along here, I want to be clear. I mean, I think a moment ago you mentioned it got no votes in the House. What I think you meant to say was it didn't get voted on.
Right.
Correct.
In the House.
Yes.
It wasn't that the House voted and nobody voted for it. But, you know, Michael, as a proud Hoosier, and a Bears fan. I mean, do you think the Bears are going to Hammond?
You know,
Indiana put together a $1 billion package to try to woo them.
Everybody that I've spoken to and friends and family all just feel that it could still happen. Now, here's the thing. If they don't take Indiana, what's left for them? What is going to be the impetus to get the legislature to move on anything, whether in a special summer session or in the fall? What would be the impetus? It's almost going to be time to put up and shut up. Look, I love the Bears. I love Soldier Field. I personally think it's the best option, but Hammond and the state of Indiana have put together a very attractive package. Is it in the best location? Maybe not, but who's to say it won't improve over time? So now, you know, Illinois had all this time to get something done,
right,
and it didn't happen. So,
Claire, is this a win for Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, perhaps?
As much as he would want to win, I really don't think so. I think the Bears have been very, very firm and that they are only looking at suburban Arlington Heights and Hammond or Indiana.
Yeah.
They've said on record numerous times they are not considering any locations and that they are not staying at Soldier Field. They've also said, just to clarify this again this morning, that they are sticking to their timeline and choosing between Hammond and Arlington Heights with a decision by late spring, which is kind of around now, or early summer, they say.
Mm-hmm.
So to Mike's point, the clock, I mean, we're in the fourth quarter. We're at the end of the fourth quarter.
That's right. We're done.
Yeah. Well, Violet, the chief budget negotiator in the Senate, I'm talking about Democrat L.G. Sims Jr., said, quote, "Everyday working families, as a result of this budget, will see their lives get easier." So talk about pieces of the budget that support what he said.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to, you know, as you kind of mentioned, you know, help everyday people, but a lot of it is Band-Aid fixes, right? We're looking at a one-time payment of $400 for SNAP recipients, which isn't nothing, but, you know, when you're looking at the way things have been scaled back, the way prices are going up, you know, it's a lot harder to kind of see that as a long-term solution. The 1.3-cent gas tax increase that was supposed to be implemented this July is frozen till January.
Mm-hmm.
A sales tax holiday was created between August 7th and 16th for back-to-school shopping, just to help out a little bit, you know, with, you know, your grocery cart then. But on the other side of that, you know, as Claire mentioned, there's these progressive taxes, as they would say, on cryptocurrency, on, you know, larger businesses, things like that, to try and pull money from You know, maybe these other revenues, like the tax on digital assets and sports betting, is expected to bring in like $65 million. So again, you know, nothing to scoff at,
right.
But a lot of these measures for working class folks do seem to be kind of, you know, Band-Aid fixes.
Well, the governor had been pushing for this one for years, Claire. There will be a cell phone ban in Illinois schools.
Yes, this is public schools and during class time only, but no cell service. So to speak, lawmakers passed that measure, requiring schools to adopt what they're calling bell-to-bell phone bans, applying to personal laptops, also some tablets. A state senator, Christina Castro, has carried the bill for the past few years alongside J.B. Pritzker, saying her goal is to make sure that kids stay focused. This wouldn't apply to kids who require technology for certain medical reasons, we should say. But the bill, as you mentioned, J.B. has been wanting this for years and is now headed to his desk.
Michael, e-scooters and e-bikes will also see a statewide regulation. Up until now, that was typically handled at the municipal level, right?
That's right. That's right. This is a bill that was backed by Secretary of State Alexei Jelunias, who says it prioritizes public safety by closing these regulatory gaps and mandating an age requirement. So any e-bike or these what they call e-motos exceeding 28 miles per hour will now require a driver's license, registration, and insurance. So basically, adults, again, taking away all the fun away from these e-scooters. But you are seeing more. I had an e-scooter. I had a moped back in the 80s, so not quite the same thing. But at the same time, you are seeing a lot of stories, a lot of reports out there of people getting injured on these things, children heading to the emergency room. So they're just trying to make it safer for the public out there. So there's just a lot more regulation.
Claire, there's a Democratic supermajority in Springfield, which there has been for years. Tell us what Republicans are saying this morning.
Well, they are largely opposed to the budget so far. They say many criticizing it as a record-setting spending plan that increases the general revenue fund taxes by over $700 million, which, you know, that ain't nothing. They argued that the final legislation was also really rushed without proper and ample review. State Senator Chapin Rose, this is a top GOP budget negotiator, told the Sun-Times that they're loading up their grocery cart literally before they have any idea how much they're going to spend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quote. Also, GOP leaders such as House Minority Leader, that's Tony McCombie, criticized the process of just dropping sort of these massive budget packages with little time for minority leaders to even take a look and go sort of line by line to assess them.
I want to go through a few more bills that passed over the weekend, ones that could be meaningful for people here in the Chicago area, including concert goers. Lawmakers went after the so-called ticket bots, Michael.
That's right. Or you can call it the Taylor Swift Shake It Off bill. You know, it's for all those Swifties out there who couldn't get their hands on those 2023 Eras tickets. It's where this ban now would ban consumers from using bots or multiple accounts to buy more tickets to an event than the venue already allows. State Representative Syed carried the bill and said she was spurred to act after this whole Taylor Swift concert debacle where, you know, these ticket platforms were imposing high anti-competitive ticket prices. Some of them were like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 just to get to this concert. So under the bill, violators could be fined up to $2,000. So there is justice at the end for
music fans.
Swifties.
Big
the
sigh
bot
of relief.
Crackdown.
The bot crackdown. I can see the headlines now.
Uh-huh.
Like most of the legislation that we've been discussing, Violet, a bill that could strengthen privacy of medical records is now awaiting Pritzker's signature, too.
Yeah, and he's eager to sign it. In his own words, you know, it's giving patients full control over their private health information. So, you know, it's aimed at protecting patients from, you know, other states criminalizing certain care that's legal in Illinois, such as abortion or gender-affirming care. It lets patients, you know, keep certain reproductive health procedures and information, such as, you know, as I mentioned, an abortion, from being shared when, you know, sharing medical information, whether that be with state trackers, different things like that.
Yeah.
And we also saw the state remove, you know, testosterone as well as abortion pills from its pharmaceutical tracking in this legislative session. That was another goal that was stated a few years ago as, you know, other states have tried to, again, criminalize this care that is legal in Illinois.
Illinois lawmakers are infamous for working up to and sometimes past the May 31st at midnight deadline, but some key bills were passed last week. For information on new regulations for the home and auto insurance industry, head over to wbez.org/intheloop because we covered that bill in detail last week. You'll want to listen. Also, tune in tomorrow at 9. You'll learn more about new regulations for artificial intelligence. Now, Claire, it is not all Springfield in local news this morning, right? Tell me some other stories that you might be following.
Well, there's some E. coli lurking in one of our suburban pools. For anyone that was thinking of taking a dip today in Orland Park, you can't do it because the Centennial Park Aquatic Center is temporarily closed. Two people developed E. coli infections over the weekend. So Sun-Times reporting that some initial water sample tests did come back normal, but the two infections prompt a precautionary closure. So that pool and that center will be closed today, was yesterday and today, just to make sure that the E. coli is all clear.
Okay, I hope so.
Me too.
I hope so. Watching any baseball or anything?
You know. I might be. Sox are on a roll, man.
The Sox have a better record than the Cubs right now.
Yes.
Pete Kronstrom still making some fantastic plays in center, but Cardinals got the best of the Cubs this weekend. They are starting a homestand tomorrow against the A's, but the Sox keeping it rolling.
Absolutely.
As long as Mooney keeps hitting home runs, Colson's having an outstanding last couple of games.
Right, but we're all kind of nervous because our big, bright, you know, rookie star, Munetaka Murakami, he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring injury.
Oh, no.
He has the most home runs in the American League with 20. And there are some big games coming up against the Dodgers and just so many, I think the Yankees.
And the home run derby.
Yeah.
So we're all bracing to see if the Sox continue the momentum.
I hope so. I know you're excited, Violet. It's a pretty busy Pride lineup for this month, right?
Oh, my gosh. There is so much going on. Of course, we've got the Pride Parade at the end of the month. We've got Pride Fest about two-thirds of the way through to kind of preempt that. There's tons going on, though. I mean, there's a quilt exhibit on June 6th at the Center in Halstead. They're also hosting Laverne Cox for a book talk later this month.
Cool.
Southside Pride, July 5th, bringing Pride Month into July, as we should.
Yes.
And so, yeah, just lots going on, and I'm sure you'll be seeing a lot more under my byline as we just try and, you know, feature what we can. We've got legislative updates coming out of this session, as well as more fun stuff, some features on authors and things like that.
Well, in other news, something else under your byline that we got to mention, we woke up this morning to really sad news. Spencer Leak Jr. of Leak & Sons Funeral Home has died at the age of 56.
Yeah, an absolute titan of the funeral industry, you know, third generation with this longtime family-owned business, you know, quintessential Chicago, really. I was talking to a few different folks yesterday who, you know, remembered him, obviously, for his professionalism, his, you know, just gentle kind of empathy when dealing with families who were grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And his family dealt with some of the biggest families that were grieving. I mean, close friends of the Jackson family, they handled Jesse Jackson's funeral earlier this year.
Right.
He himself personally drove the remains down to South Carolina for the funeral to continue. So a really massive loss.
Wow. What else are you keeping an eye on, Michael?
The whole Bears and what's their next move. I mean, in fact, my story today is going to be following up on how Indiana folks are feeling about this and what's next for them. I really do think the next 24 to 48 hours will be very telling because, honestly, if the Bears don't move on Indiana, what's left for them?
Mm. WBEZ's Michael Puente, Claire Lane, and Violet Miller with the Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.